This is Scott Becker with the Becker Business Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Lori Goldstein. Lori's an award-winning employment lawyer. She built her own practice, sort of a very thoughtful and intelligent leader. Lori, we're going to talk to you about building a business today, about things employers should never do, and a little bit more. Can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, Scott. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today. As you said, I'm an employment lawyer. I actually represent employers and employees, not at the same companies. My solo practice is celebrating 10 years in February, and I handle pretty much everything legal that affects the workplace, from compliance, policies, disputes, complaints, COVID, and contracts. And before I opened my practice in 2011, I spent 27 years as an employer-side employment and litigation attorney at two downtown firms. And I now have a virtual office on the North Shore, but my clients are both local and national.
Fantastic. Can you take a moment? You've built your own practice from scratch. You've seen a lot of other people. You work with a lot of businesses, employers that have grown businesses. A few thoughts on what sort of works in building a practice, building a firm, building a business. Just a couple thoughts there. Then I'd like to talk about, in the employment context, what are things employers should never do? But start with thoughts of building a practice, building a business.
Okay. Practical and common sense to me is it starts with doing good work, providing reasonable, practical, and honest advice, being reliable and dependable, so that your clients and your colleagues keep coming back and refer others. It also makes your referral sources valuable to and successful with their clients and their referrals. And I would say the next thing would be networking, developing and honing relationships, both personal and professional, and being a giver first. I pretty much taught myself how to develop business and network when I started my firm. And for many of us who love to meet new people, networking comes very naturally. I know that others have to work at coming out of their shell. But no matter what, you have to devote time to it. You have to make time to network. You have to be creatively thinking of ways that you can connect people you meet and people you know, help clients and others. And probably the third factor in building a business is to have continued visibility and show value to your clients and your colleagues and the community. Explain how you can help them and why they should consider retaining you. Many companies, many individuals don't realize until it's too late. And in fact, when I meet a new or potential client, I often hear, "I wish I had known you 8 months ago when fill in the blank. I was fired. My boss was harassing me. We had to fire an employee and now they're suing us." So be visible, write articles, send client updates, offer to be a blog contributor, present and educate through webinars, which I've been doing many of, podcasts like this. It's a good idea to do regular check-ins with clients, both during the pandemic and generally. And I would say just, you know, keep in front of people. Make sure that you're continuing to contact them and let them know you're there.
So following up on a few of those, you've mentioned sort of do great work and be a reliable lawyer, reliable advisor, be a good networker, stay visible, stay in front of people, connect one-to-one with people as well. You've talked about that as well. Talk for a moment about networking. You do a wonderful job of connecting people, networking people, and I want you to talk a moment on that, and then I also want you to talk for a moment about being a giver, not a taker, in terms of developing and fertilizing a book of business and growing a book of business, that those concepts are so important. So talk a moment about networking, whether it comes naturally to you and how you got good at it, and then also this concept of, you know, being a giver, not a taker, sort of a go-giver versus a taker.
Sure. So networking really does come naturally. I didn't realize what networking was all about when I was a young lawyer at a law firm and spending most of my time doing the work and not really working on building a business. or networking with clients, we would have the typical seminars for our employment clients, and we would do educational things and networking events. I would help to do articles, write articles, do presentations and things. But I didn't realize that while I was on the soccer field with my kids or at a PTO meeting, that I could have been easily talking about what the person next to me does for a living or what they do outside of being a mom or a dad. And I could have talked about my own. And it's not, to me, it's not sales. I used to think, as many do, I'm not a good salesman. I don't want to push myself. I don't want to be an ambulance chaser. But people love talking about themselves. So it's just so simple to have a conversation with somebody you meet, ask them what they do, ask about their business, tell them what you do, and that comes naturally. And the networking...
How does that concept of doing this with PTO, doing this with the soccer team, doing this wherever, how does that work? We're able to do it naturally. Like, you have this fine line where you could do it naturally, and you are very... Yeah, I've known you for a long time, so I know you to be a very gracious person. So I do know that it comes naturally to you. At the same time, there's other people that you could see them at your club, wherever you are, and people run from them because they feel like every time they see them, they're going to be trying to sell them insurance. How do you get this fine line of talking about business, being open to business without selling, so people don't want to avoid you like the COVID or the plague?
Right. Well, I think there's a couple things. One is that you be a listener, and rather than starting to talk about yourself and what you do and how you think you can help them, find out what they do and what their difficult spots might be. And you may find things that either you might be able to do for them or somebody you know in your networking group, you know, there may be several resources that could help them with their issues, business or personal. So it's listening and really being open to what are their challenges. And it leads into the giving part of it, which is don't network with the idea that, you know, I'm going to get a client out of this, or this guy's going to send me, you know, three referrals. You just go into it with, I'm really happy to meet a new person. It's wonderful to meet new people and find out what they're all about, how they got to did their business and how they got to where they were. And then, you know, be able to offer to them help in terms of clients I might know that they could connect with, or other colleagues or referral sources, or ways, people that I know that might be great co-presenters, or somebody that I know that does a blog on something that this person would be a good contributor to. So you look at it as, how can I help you? Not what am I going to get out of this? And, you know,
and how do you let them know? How do you let them know that you're sort of, and I'm a huge believer in exactly what you're saying, and how do you sort of send the message, I'm open for business, without being sales oriented? Or do they just recognize that? Does that come naturally as they sort of understand it without having to hit them over the head with it?
I think it does. I mean, it may not to some people, but to most people, they'll often say, I didn't even know there was such a thing as an employment lawyer. I didn't know that there were people that knew these things or handled these things. And you don't have to hit them over the head. They, most of the time, like I said, I get somebody that says, you know, I wish I knew you 8 months ago. My brother-in-law got fired. And people start to realize, oh, I see what an employment lawyer does, and this is how I might be able to use you sometime. So it usually works. And I would not hard sell. I also wouldn't go to every meeting or soccer game or PTO meeting, you know, with the idea that I'm going to walk around and hand out my card. You know, you have to be subtle and in moderation.
100%. And talk about, you're an employment lawyer, work with companies, but also work with employees. What are three or four things an employer should never do? Sort of the things when an employer calls you and says, we did this, you know, we told this person we're firing her because she's a woman. What? Give us three or four things an employer should never do. Examples of things you hear and you're like, ah, that's bad.
Right. Well, you can imagine in 36 plus years of practice, I could probably write a book. I've seen a lot of no-nos. And so a few things, and this is pretty timely, but it will always remain an important issue, or I should say for a long time. I would have to start with COVID guidelines and protocols. An employer should never intentionally not follow, skimp on, or ignore the state, local, and federal guidelines, suggestions, and protocols, even if they aren't laws, executive orders, or legal mandates that you could be fined for. And I have seen this more times than I want to admit, where an owner or the management, you know, doesn't want to send people home, even if they should be doing that for quarantine reasons, and they're reluctant to follow the guidelines unless they're legal mandates. So, for example, the CDC has protocols that most of us are following and most employers are monitoring, and it's not law. They are guidelines, just like the Cook County travel quarantine. But there are reasons for guidelines. It stops the spread. It reduces risk. And for employers, to not follow that ultimately means more risk. More people may be infected or exposed and then have to stay away from work. You may have to shut down the workplace. You might get sued. So follow the guidelines. That's one.
What else?
Sure. Second, I would say, don't ignore complaints or knowledge or suspicion of possibly unlawful discrimination or harassment that may be going on at work. Then that by that I mean conduct that's based on a legally protected category like age, race, disability. Many times an employer or a manager will ignore it or it's not properly handled because the harasser is, for example, the harasser is known throughout the company as just being that way, and we know he's that way. You know, that's Ed. He's been here for 40 years, and he just pinches girls' butts. That's what he does. That's a no-no. Or the harasser's one of the top salespeople. He's a big moneymaker for the company, and he's too valuable to lose. So you look the other way. And another problem is you see everybody.
How do people deal with, you know, I mean, Grace and I are producers. We record podcasts periodically where somebody says something, we have to edit out. And some of it we know is just generationally. But things mm-hmm. they absolutely can't do today, can't say today, can't do today, and stuff like that.
Yep.
How do you deal with those employees in your company that maybe, you know, I mean, it could be men or women, often in their 60s or 70s, that, you know, come from a different place, from a different time, sometimes even older, and they just sort of, they don't mean something bad by it, but it's things that are completely right. unacceptable today. How do you manage that kind of behavior and talk? And obviously things aren't easy when it's somebody pinching the woman's butt, that so clearly you can't do that.
Right.
But there are certain things that you have, you know, that generationally people did or talked about in a way that they don't allow people to talk about today, and rightfully so they don't allow it today. But how do you manage some of those employees without, you know, also getting a foul, getting accused of age discrimination and those kinds of things?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it doesn't matter under the law what the intention was of the harasser. What matters is what the victim, how the victim perceives it. And even if it's an ultra-sensitive person on the other side, that's what you go with. So just as you would do with, you know, a 25-year-old or a 40-year-old, if it's an older person and this is something they've learned generationally, you have to get them sensitivity training and get them the education they need so that they learn what the new rules are and behave with the new rules. And if they can't behave, you discipline them. And then if they can't, you know, follow the new rules, you let them go, which is a hard thing to do.
When you fire them, and not to, you know, to go into this concept of employer-employee relationships, things employers shouldn't do, do you tell them, we're firing you because you're old and you can't learn?
No. Well, nobody in their right mind would say that to somebody that they're firing, even if that's
reason. I'm kidding, of course. For our audience, I'm joking.
Right. But fire them right away. I mean, you know, give the person an opportunity to get training and to, you know, come around and to behave. And if they can't, they continue to be a risk and a liability for the company. So more of a risk to keep them around and let them do that than to let them go, because I don't think a judge or a jury would say, yep, you had to keep that person because he was 60, even though he, you know, calls everybody honey or does worse things.
Yes. Do you ever get people, you know, there's been this huge increase in all kinds of sensitivity training. Periodically, you get people sort of, sort of being a little negative towards sensitivity training.
Yes.
You know, sort of, you know, poo-pooing it or saying, oh, this is just a check the box thing. It's not real. How do you manage people? Do most people know that if they agree with it or not, they better go along with it and shut up? Or do you get people pushing back on it, on the sensitivity training and stuff like that? Is there any of that that you see?
I think sometimes you see that, not so much with the employers who think it's a smart thing to do for their employees, but with some of the employees who feel that, you know, they don't need it or they know everything or this is just, you know, like you said, checking the box. Sexual harassment training is now required in Illinois for every Illinois employer to provide to their employees. So whether they poo-poo it or not, you have to do this annually. The first deadline is this December 31st. And it's important. It reduces the company's risk. It's smart all around so that employees and managers know how it works, how the complaint procedure works. There's actually, I don't know if you've heard, but there was an executive order entered in September by the president that basically stops certain sensitivity training for government contractors, anybody that receives money from the government, if the sensitivity training basically goes overboard. And I forget what the actual words are. And there's a hotline that people are calling to complain that their company is doing sensitivity training or doing too much. And it's just an interesting, and there's a class action that was just filed by the NAACP and two other rights groups. So it remains to be seen. But when you say that people push back, I mean, there's a big pushback.
Yes. Got it. So fascinating, right? And amazing how everything has become very, very politicized and so fascinating. And one of the, of course, great fellows of President Trump, whether they think sensitivity training has gone too far, not too far, whatever it is, one of the great values of the president is he doesn't explain, and doesn't have any explain why he's doing that. Rather, he just sort of plays to his base on it rather than explaining, here's why you're doing it. It adds a lot of cost. We're not sure if it's effective. We should do it in a different way. We do think there's problems, but he does a horrible job of explaining literally almost everything. And thus, it becomes a huge, you know, issue, of course.
Right. It's hard to follow.
Situation. Very hard to follow.
Yep.
Yes. So tell us, we've talked about a couple things that employers do poorly. Give us one more thing that you've seen in your time that employers shouldn't do.
I would say another thing, and this is pretty timely also, is that they should never make decisions about a reduction in force, furloughs or layoffs, or even individual terminations sometimes, without looking at the big picture, usually consulting with an employment attorney. Obviously, there are usually economic, operational reasons to have a reduction in force, which is sadly true for many companies these days. And most employees are at will. So people ask me, well, if they're at will, which means anybody can end it at any time for any or no reason, then what does it matter? Well, it can't be for an illegal reason. So even if you need to reduce force by 25 employees, you have to make sure you select the employees who stay and the employees who go in a non-discriminatory way. Not all the older people, not people because they're, you know, of a certain race or religion. So you can't just go into that thinking, well, everyone will know that we can't afford to keep all these employees. There's a second step, and that's really having well thought out decisions with managers doing assessments and things and recording it so that you really can show that these were legitimate business decisions.
Got it. Thank you very, very much. Lori, final question. Where do people reach you if they want to consult with you, they want to network with you, they want to hire you? How do people find Lori Goldstein?
A few ways. They can reach me at my phone number, which is 847-624-6640. My email address is lori.a.goldstein@gmail.com. And my website is lorigoldsteinlaw.com.
Lori, thank you for joining us again. A pleasure talking to you about both building a business and about employment law. Truly a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining the Becker Business Podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Scott. Happy holidays.
Yourself as well.